More cowbell, please.
I have to ask Steve. Steve, can I ask you something very selfishly?
Sure.
Can you give me more details about the Cleveland earthquake, please?
I don't really know very many details just yet. It was
20 minutes ago or something, wasn't it?
Measured 4.
Isn't that pretty substantial?
Yeah, it is pretty substantial. I'm not seeing any reports of any damage or anything like that. People saying that their whole houses shook and things like that, but no damage reports that I've seen so far.
Is that a common place to have earthquakes?
Well, you don't think of Ohio as being earthquake central. However, I've been in 2 in my life. One has been in Southern California, where you kind of expect them, and the other was in Dayton, Ohio, and it petrified me because that's the first one I had ever experienced. And you don't know what to, like, my first thought was, I was in a house, and I thought, there must be something going on with the boiler system of the house, because everything's shaking and rattling and stuff, and you go, no one else has experienced this except for the people in this house, right? And then you look outside, and you see people running out of their houses and looking around, trying to figure out what it is. I don't know how it's compared to the one in Cleveland this morning, but it's scary it's happening.
There is a tweet here that says, this is the biggest earthquake to hit Cleveland since LeBron announced he was going to Miami.
Now, this isn't on the New Madrid Fault. I know we are, right? Illinois is.
Oh, are
we? Southern Illinois is. Southeast or southwestern, yeah.
Oh.
This is scary. The world is... Mother Nature's mad at us,
it's
guys.
It's caving in on itself, Wendy.
I've been in 2, both of them within a week, so one was an aftershock of the other.
Outside, in the Midwest or
outside
elsewhere?
San Diego. Well, I guess I felt them here, too, but just the little ones. But a real earthquake in San Diego was...
But do you know what I mean? Where you lose your bearings and you're like, wait, how can everything around me just be shaking and rattling like this?
It's a bizarre feeling.
Wendy's praying.
No, I'm just hoping the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is okay because I haven't gone there yet.
Oh, it's fine.
It'll be okay.
And if it's not, they'll rebuild it, make it better.
Yes.
I'll just go to the one at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, the traveling show.
Right. Problem solved. That was easy.
Okay, a little bit more from the USGS. A 4.0 earthquake in northeast Ohio near East Lake, 10:50 this morning, so about 22 minutes ago. No reports of any injuries. People in several counties, Lake County, Euclid, Mentor, all report feeling, the building shake and things like that, but no reports of damage and no reports of injury.
Steve, I know you're not a seismologist, or are you? But I'll ask this question anyway.
Not during the
day. Seismology doesn't matter.
Do you have to keep an eye out for after effects, aftershocks, after tremors? Is that the kind of thing we can expect?
Well, maybe, Bill, but I mean, in the big scheme of things, while this is 4 is, pretty big for Ohio, if there's no damage here, I don't think that the aftershocks would be too much of a concern.
All right. Okay.
I'm not a seismologist.
To be clear.
To be clear,
right,
certain.
All right, thank you for that. Wasn't it nice to meet Jim Gaffigan, Wendy?
I am such a huge fan of
his. Wasn't that fun?
I was actually kind of shy and quiet. I don't know if you noticed.
You were both shy and quiet. Who are you?
I love him.
Yeah.
He's so funny.
Yeah. Yep. And seems to be a very nice man on top of it. Imagine that combination.
Yeah, I don't see that
much.
You
don't see that ever. That never happens anymore. Also, if I'm imagining this, please tell me, but your hair is completely different from what I'm accustomed to, isn't it?
I got it colored last Tuesday. It's a little darker.
Oh, I like to give it a week before I say anything. I like to go a solid week before I jump in on anything.
It looks different this morning. I don't know what it was.
It looks very different.
I had more of a side bang, which I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is unintentional? It just kind of does what it wants to do?
No, I mean, I blow dried it the same way.
Yeah.
It just, I had more time this morning.
Oh.
Maybe that was it.
Very nice. Very nice.
It looks very Jennifer Aniston-y.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You will probably be confused with Jennifer Aniston more than once today.
Better than James Spader.
Not counting out James Spader, but you'll also get a little Aniston action.
All right.
So be ready for that.
It's just weird because I wanted to go blonder and it's actually darker. I just have a difficult time. I show pictures and I say exactly what I want, like really thick, white blonde, chunky highlights. It is not that.
It's not that.
I love it.
No,
but
it looks very nice.
It's not.
Yeah.
I got to just do my own hair.
Yeah, well.
I'm going to YouTube how to do it.
And do your own.
I'm going to have Jim do the back.
Wow.
He doesn't know this yet.
Wow. You set up a whole shop there in your house.
You know me. I'm pretty descriptive about what I want.
Yeah.
You know,
but they can't seem to get that
in.
I don't know
what it is.
But you still stay with the same hair person?
No, I'm kind of.
Oh.
You know, I'm in training.
At this point, I'd let you do it.
Would you?
I like to go where the price is right because, you know, I used to get my hair colored twice a year and get highlights put in. Mm-hmm. And now I have so much gray hair that I have to go every 6 weeks and it disgusts me.
Mm-hmm.
That's way too much.
Why don't you let it go gray?
Well, I asked about that actually this time because somebody
Jamie
said
Jamie Lee Curtis.
That's the style now.
Or I was thinking of who was the singer we were talking about last week?
Leon Redbone.
Leon Redbone it.
Leon Redbone it.
He's a guy.
Yeah.
Can I just say?
But he's got the same length. There he has.
Go like Judy Collins or, you know.
Not Leon Redbone.
Leon Russell?
Leon Russell.
Leon Russell.
Right.
Just anyone named Leon. Just go in and go, give me a Leon and see what they do.
You come out with a mustache if you did the Leon Redbone.
And that, a wide that I get waxed.
And a Panama hat.
Uh-huh. Actually, I have to wax less now, but I have to color more.
Oh, that's
because the gray
trade-off.
Just comes. But so I asked about, you know, what about going gray? Because I'll tell you, my mom had a battle with cancer. She spent her whole life prior to this growing up getting perms and getting her hair bleached.
Yeah.
And then when she lost all her hair with chemo and it came back naturally, it was the most beautiful color of pretty much white with a little bit of dark gray. It was salt.
Right.
It was the prettiest hair she's ever had in her life. So then I keep thinking, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll do the gray route. It's very popular.
Very popular.
I asked how you do it. Do I have to shave my whole head and start from scratch? Ooh. And she said, well, that's a good way to do it, but what we would do is just keep going whiter and whiter and let it grow out.
Oh yeah.
And then you'd have to get it cut short. And I'm like, I'm not ready for
don't
that.
Do
Why don't
it.
You just
don't
go to a
Mary says stay away from it.
Scary movie and shock your hair white.
I don't believe people who say, I just woke up the next day and it was gray.
But there are instances of people where something so jarring has happened to them that within a day their hair turns gray or white. Every time I read it, I go, that doesn't happen. But then another story pops up where somebody claims that happened.
I think it happened to Michael McDonald. It's a very famous story.
Oh.
He got kicked off the Doobie Brothers and boom.
Next day, all
hair,
gray.
All hair was white.
How about that? All right. More of this sort of thing in just a moment. Stay where you are. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
They have a good fireworks display over on Sox Side.
Sure they do. They definitely do.
Bill, I went to livescience.com.
Yeah.
And
what do they say?
For centuries, it's been widely believed that fright or dread can turn hair white. They say that the hair of some condemned prisoners, such as Marie Antoinette, turned white the night before their executions. There are no modern reports from death row of this happening now. But is it true? It is, in fact, medically impossible.
Oh,
there is no mechanism by which hair could organically turn white either suddenly or overnight. Despite manufacturer suggestions that certain products can restore life to hair, hair is always dead. Once the hair grows out of the head, it can't be influenced by any psychological or physiological processes in the body, including scares or shocks.
There was some it's killing me that I can't remember who, but there was some celebrity a few years ago who said that their hair turned white overnight. Something happened, something in the family that scared them, and then their hair was white starting the next day.
It happened on Twin Peaks, too, so.
It did happen on Twin Peaks, but I know that was
fake. Leland Palmer.
Oh, right.
After Laura was murdered.
Murdered, remember?
Yes.
That was crazy. Here's a question that I know is silly, but I don't know the answer to it. Do women still spend the day at a beauty shop? Like when I was a kid, my mom would sometimes spend the day at a beauty shop and she had friends who did similar, but my wife's never done anything like that. Is that still a thing that women do? Just go to the beauty shop and spend the day there?
Your mom really spent the whole day?
Yeah.
What'd she have done?
Not that much.
Just talking and catching
maybe,
up?
I don't know.
Maybe she had a lot. It was just very subtle, Bill.
I think she told you she was there the whole day.
Well, no, because there were days that I had to go with her. Like in the summer when there wasn't school, I'd have to go with her. And this, when you're five and you're sitting and you're spending a day in the beauty shop, it's a long day.
Because women used to have a standing. That was part of it, too.
Is that what it is? You know,
they what?
They would have a standing appointment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah. I mean, to get a cut and color, 3 hours at the most.
Right.
I mean, I'm usually out of there in about 2 hours.
Back then, you had to rat it up a little bit.
There was that.
Puff it
yeah,
out.
You had to sit under the hair dryer.
Oh, right.
That's I guess that's pre-blow dryers.
I would go and I would ask my mom, like, how much longer like that? But she had that rumbly thing on her head.
Right.
She'd what? It was a lot of yelling.
She could hear
how
you.
Much longer? Reading, I can't hear you.
She'd be reading the McCall's magazine.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I was just going through this, and we kind of briefly touched on this when we were talking about Corvettes and other things. I liked going shopping with my mom, but yeah. I was talking to Jimmy Mack and hearing you talk. It's like your moms took you everywhere. They never just left you home alone.
Oh, no.
And I just feel really
six.
My kids do not have that. Either they're shopping with me or I just leave them at home.
Oh.
Even, you know.
But they're 16 and 20.
No, but even when they were younger, I would make it so, you know, I would plan it so Jim was home to watch them. That's the last thing I want to do is drag them with. They slow me down, man.
Yeah, but it was different because your mom...
I guess dads were at work.
Right. And your mom wasn't working, I bet, and she was...
Oh, my mom worked, yeah. She was a single parent, so she worked, but I wanted to go with. But I hear all these guys that... Jim will say, you know, I'd go to the toy section at, you know, Marshall's, and it was such a tiny toy section that I'd be through it in 5 minutes.
Yeah, sure.
And then I'd just be sitting there going, come on.
Right.
It was the worst.
Yeah.
Go to at Meadowview Mall, I think it was called. They had the Sears and JCPenney.
Those were the anchor stores there.
Didn't they have big toy sections though that you could look through?
I remember the cashew smell at the Sears. They had that, you know, that popcorn island.
Everything smells like nuts and popcorn at Sears, no matter what you buy.
Did they have the little Nut Huts like they had in bars?
Well,
it was an island.
It was there was a whole department. But
I don't remember the nuts.
Buy there? No. Yeah, they had a bunch by us.
I went to the Sears at either, probably Oakbrook was the one I went to. I don't remember any hot toasted nuts.
You buy a vacuum cleaner at Sears and you bring it home and it's like, it smells like cashews.
Right, exactly.
Why does the house smell like cashews?
I don't remember that. I went to that one too, Wendy.
Yeah, I don't remember any nuts.
Popcorn.
No.
Maybe they took away the nuts and that's why Sears went under.
That was their downfall.
Who doesn't like a warm nut?
Everyone does. Ridiculous.
Go ahead, Nick DiGilio. Take
it's
it.
Ridiculous.
I don't care. I am so sick of being part of that show.
Mm-hmm. They don't even call it Nick's show anymore. No, it's just you. It's the best of Wendy.
It's Wendy Snyder.
Straight out of context.
With Nick DiGilio.
Yep.
I'm just not talking.
Come on. Talk.
I know it says talk show on the description sheet, but we're not going to talk anymore.
Nick
Enough
keeps
of this.
Saying, you know, boy, this thing really took off once I started here.
Yeah.
And it's been about 4 years. I think you were here before me. But he did that before I came, didn't he?
For people who don't know.
Straight out of context on Nick DiGilio's show.
The premise there is you take a sentence or two or three that when you hear it on its own, it sounds very, very dirty. And you have been featured prominently.
Right.
And Lou Manfredini is there a lot, too.
Straight out of Snyder, I think they're calling it.
Yeah, they've been calling it that. That looks good on a resume, though.
Right. Look at how many shows you're on.
Right.
My wife, you know, Sharon just texted, because we were talking about this last week, when her mom would take her and just leave her in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what my mom, I used to beg my mom to leave me in the car.
Try that now, see what happens.
It's against the law.
You can't do that anymore.
I guess you could get into less trouble leaving your kid. Not now, okay? I'm talking about when we were growing up.
Yeah.
You could get in less trouble in a car than you would if your parents left you in the whole big house by yourself.
Yeah.
But I was always left in the car with my brother and sister, and there were fights broke out.
Right.
You know, it got pretty ugly in there.
You watch your brother. You watch my brother.
Yeah.
But when you had that beauty shop day, like if my mom was going to spend the day at the beauty shop, you go in there and right off the bat, you walk in and you're smelling perm solution and stuff. And
it's changed.
This isn't going to be good.
I'm telling you, I have gotten my hair colored since I was younger. I've always been blonde, but I just like trying different things with it. And I had a cousin who did it at her house, and she had this crazy dog, and I would be getting a perm, and the perm solution sometimes would drop on the floor, and the crazy dog would go lick it up. It's like, what in the world would like that smell? And now when I got it colored, I got some low lights put in, and I actually commented, what happened to the smelly solution? This smells pretty good. And she said they've come
out.
A long way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so yeah,
progress.
I'm out in like 2 hours.
Oh, that's not bad. It's not a
day
full
at the
day.
Beauty shop. In my house coat.
But it reminded me of, remember how on Andy Griffith's show, Aunt B, she would just, it was
she
her day at the beauty
shop.
She
should have stayed there
longer. Yeah.
Wow. That's not going to be on Nick's show. He
Wendy.
Likes B.
Come on.
Well, what? Her hair didn't look that
taking
great.
Taking a shot at B?
Wow. Andy.
All right, a break, then more show. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Let me quickly catch you up if you weren't listening. A little while ago, I don't remember how we started talking about this. Oh, your hair looks differently today than it normally does. So I was trying to figure out what exactly it was. You talked about an adventure at the hairdresser.
I did not call it an adventure.
A misadventure?
I went to get my hair done like I always do. I tried somebody new and they just didn't. I love it, but it's not exactly what I requested.
It's different than what you're accustomed to.
It's just not you, Wendy. It's just not you.
I don't know who
I think it's me, and I like it, but thanks for...
Yeah, I could see it being you, but right now...
Not today, though.
Not today.
All right. First of all, one bully is enough. You think you guys get stronger when you do it together, but you don't.
We don't get stronger. We just get closer.
Yeah, that's what it is. So somehow we were talking about the idea that you may just give it in and say gray is the way to go.
Yes, because I used to get my hair colored twice a year and now it's every 6 weeks because gray comes up all the time. Yes. So
yes,
a little touch of gray.
So we were trying to figure out whether this is just an old wives' tale or not.
I looked it up at sciencesomething.com.
Science.com says that your hair does not have the ability to just turn white or gray overnight.
Because it's
dead.
This
is a gradual thing. Yes.
The ends are dead.
Right. So I said, but who? There was a celebrity a couple years ago, and the story was that he or she had something happen within the family, and then their hair turned white. And who was it? I couldn't remember. Texter after texter after texter reminded me of who that person was, and it was Barbara Bush, the former first lady who lost a child, and as a result of the trauma, says that her hair turned white overnight.
But there's no medical proof to that happening.
You can't call Barbara Bush a liar, Wendy.
I'm not. I'm saying that maybe she thought that happened.
But it didn't?
She was mistaken. I don't know. The science thing, it could be wrong because
science is wrong.
Stress can lead you to have more gray hair. So I just don't think it can, right? Yeah, but I don't think it's just like a genie comes in, waves a wand over you, and poof, you're gray. Right.
So you're going to a science website and you're going to not believe that over the texter. Who heard a story about Barbara Bush at her funeral?
I'm talking about believing Barbara Bush. She thinks it happens.
Yes. The whole family.
Your hair doesn't change color on its end. It changes.
From the roots.
When you have to get your hair colored, it's because it grows out that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess Steve's calling Barbara Bush a liar.
Steve, are you calling Barbara Bush a liar?
No, I wouldn't do that.
Well, you can't do that.
The pause. That was awesome.
You can't do that. You cannot do that.
No, it's just. It was Barbara Bush.
Yeah, it was.
I remember that too, Bill. You're right.
And I think, wasn't the story told upon her passing away? Didn't several family members come and tell that story about her? Am I imagining that?
I think that's when we found out about it.
I think that's when we first heard it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. All right. In other news, Kraft has figured out a way to get kids to eat more salad. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Salad frosting. Parents can go to great lengths to get their kids to eat more vegetables. These efforts include sneaking greens into other foods, engaging in bribery, and even just telling white lies. Kraft is attempting to jump on the lying bandwagon with a new salad dressing product aimed at kids. It's called Kraft Salad Frosting.
All right, it sounds good. What's in it?
Kraft Salad Frosting is the brand's classic ranch dressing disguised in a frosting container.
All right, that's genius.
That's pretty good.
That's very good.
Throw in some Bacos.
Am I the only one who doesn't like ranch dressing?
Yes.
You don't like it at all? Mm-mm.
I use oil and vinegar all the time.
Nothing wrong with that.
And my kids always ate the salad with oil and vinegar. They've never fought salad. In fact, they drink the oil and vinegar in the bowl afterwards. So do
they
I.
They do? You do too?
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
Love it.
Interesting story.
But I mean, so we've never used creamy.
Is that instead of a beverage with your meal?
No, but.
Along with?
Because creamy, you'd wait forever.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's also a ton more calories.
Can't you have room in your heart for more than one flavor of salad dressing? Aren't you in different...
I like blue cheese every once
sometimes
in a while.
Aren't you in a salad dressing mood and go, let's go French, let's go creamy garlic. How about some Thousand Island? Never?
Not really.
No, it's one or nothing?
I like the vinaigrette-based ones.
Yeah, that's good, too.
What do you think the average number of salad dressing jars are that people have in the refrigerator?
Steve, that's a great question. Wendy, your guess?
Well, when we were growing up, probably at least six.
Oh, six?
Six. No, but my theory is there might be three in active rotation and 22.
Yeah.
Just picking up
in
the bottom
cabinet.
Drawer.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And when we were growing up, it was only French and Thousand Island. Those were the only two I think my parents knew about. And
there were others.
There was Viva Italian.
Yeah.
Oh, we always had
Russian.
You know, the French.
Yeah. Russian.
Russian's good.
Russian.
Right.
Russian's good pretty one. Good.
Who made the salad?
Yeah.
That was Caesar, not Russia.
Right. But now there's a bunch of flavors that didn't
exist. Poppy seed's good.
Poppy seed's good. How about a zesty citrus, Wendy? What's wrong with the zesty citrus?
All right, maybe I'd try
it. Raspberry vinegar.
Raspberry vinegar.
Sesame ginger.
Yeah?
I don't have a big enough refrigerator to keep all those open.
You got to get a second refrigerator, a salad dressing refrigerator.
It's
like they have wine coolers. Not wine coolers, but wine cabinets.
Yeah. Do that.
I like how you guys think.
They should really sell salad dressing in a jar half the size.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah. Because everybody
single
likes something different, except ranch. My son goes through ranch dressing like crazy.
I don't like it.
I don't either. I don't.
But if you're doing like buffalo wings
blue
or
cheese.
Something instead of blue cheese, yeah, I could see that, yeah. I think we have in our house, there's a bottom shelf. You know when you open the door and there's shelves in the door? On the bottom shelf, I think there's one or two salad dressing containers that were there when we moved in. And
that's gross.
16.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
I don't know why we don't just throw them away.
Well, they have an expiration date on them.
They do. We all do.
That's just general guidance.
Right.
I love this Near East rice pilaf mix. I get it all the time. And when it's on sale, I buy them.
Yeah.
And I found some, and we just got our kitchen redone last year. So I must have taken old ones and moved them into the new cabinets, because I'm not kidding you. I found some from 2017. Yeah, they were on sale, but yeah, I never used them.
I know. So when you're getting this, if you're getting this for your kids, this Kraft salad frosting, keep in mind, it's not quite as it sounds. It sounds like it's cake frosting that you're putting on a salad.
It's genius.
Because they're calling it frosting, but in reality, it's not. But really, if it does the trick and your kid thinks he's putting frosting on his or her salad, good for them. Everybody wins. All right, we'll take a break. We've got more show coming up. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill Laffin, it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, here's a suggestion off the text line. I don't know if it's accurate or not. This is why Wendy's hair is turning gray. It's all the vinaigrettes. I don't think you can
blame... I don't wash my hair with it.
You don't wash your hair in it. You put it on your salad and you drink it.
I love vinegar. I'm sorry. I really do.
Can you take me back to that part of the conversation, because I'm curious. So when the meal is done, when the salad portion of the meal is done, you and the boys...
Jim doesn't like oil
Jim
and vinegar.
Doesn't
He's
do this.
Is it like ritual? Do you do it in unison or
no?
You
know, we don't do it every
lift
time.
You your salad bowl up and you drink the
like. You know, you don't put milk in your cereal, but right. A lot of people, when the cereal's finished, they just drink the milk. We
you
do
guys
that.
All
with
do
the
that
vinegar.
With salad dressing. Did they do this because they saw you do this, or was it just instinctual? How did they know to do this?
Maybe I said, you know what I do.
Yeah. And they said, well, if it's good enough for mom, they're going to do it.
They get that weird feeling like in the back of their jaw, that little tight, you know.
I love that feeling.
Yeah?
Yeah, I love vinegar. And back to when my mom would make dinners, she broil some chicken breast and it got kind of bland after a while. So when you were finished with your salad, you would dip the chicken in the oil and vinegar.
Oh, spruce it up.
Yeah.
So this is a lifelong pursuit for
you. It kind of is. Yeah. I really love it. And it's funny because there's an olive oil and vinegar shop in downtown LaGrange.
That's all they sell.
And I'm wondering how they've stayed in business, but there are people like me that like to try different vinegars.
That's all they sell is olive oil and vinegar. Wow.
Yep.
All right. That's very impressive.
I should go there more often.
What? So you've been in the store.
Yes.
Is it busy in there?
No.
No. You know why? Because that's all they sell.
Yeah, I know.
There's really no waiting, is there? There's an oil line and a vinegar line.
There are so many vinaigrettes, though, now, and different flavors of olive oil.
Yeah.
Where they're infused with things. I do. It's been there a while, and I am kind of confused, but I'm going to go there tonight just to give them some business.
Shoot some video for us so we can post
it. I'd love to see what that looks like.
Hello, is anyone here?
We'll be here. Take a number. They yelled at it when you come in.
We'll be with you shortly.
Right.
You know, it's not so much a thing here, but in New York, I noticed there's a lot of boutique shops in New York that sell almost nothing. Like, it'll be a clothing store, and they'll only have like five or six dresses or items of apparel, and that's it. I'm not exaggerating. And I always say to myself, how in the world do they stay? I mean, what's a good day there? I sold two things today. That's a good day. That's a great day.
Well, is it a little boutique?
Yeah. Very, very small shops. But I would go in there, and you know,
they have jewelry too, though, don't they?
Sometimes. Not always. But there were shops in there that had less than a dozen items, and you just, you go, boy, this is the biggest hit or miss shop ever. You walk in, you look around, you go, nope, and you're done.
I went to a little boutique shop, and I had a mammogram last week, and results are in, all good. Mm-hmm. And I just want to remind people, too many people say, boy, I skipped a year and had some problems, so go get a mammogram. Just go do it. And I went and bought myself a bracelet afterwards because I thought,
you deserve a bracelet.
Yeah. And it was, it's this Trades brand, and they have a lot of proceeds go to benefit people that make these bracelets elsewhere in Africa and other places.
Nice.
And it's just cute, and I liked it. And there was this really strong magnet. And I'm like, God, you could like lift up, you know, a car with it. This magnet was so strong to keep it.
Oh, the clasp part of the bracelet?
Yeah, look what's not on me. The bracelet. Oh. It lasted one day.
Oh, that's too
bad. I know. I'm so bummed, and I don't want to go back to the little boutique because it's not their fault. But
no.
It was $60 bucks.
Oh, wow.
I know. So I wore it one day.
This?
I just don't have it.
You don't know where it is? It fell off of you?
Would it be lost if I knew where it was?
Oh.
I took the dog to daycare. He doesn't jump in the car, so I was lifting him up. I went back and checked the area in which, and it's so heavy, I would have felt it fall off.
Right.
And I just noticed that it wasn't on at the end of the day.
You sure you put it on?
Yeah, I slept in it, so then I looked in my bed.
Yeah.
I can't find it. Wow. One day, like 1.5 days it lasted. I'm so
That's
irritated.
Horrible.
I know. I'm going to write to the company and say, you know, really? Your magnet is that strong? It should have stuck to my metal knee, shouldn't it, when I was dropping? It's just
you need to go
dangling.
In for a full body cavity search and see if it's not somewhere on your person.
I'm just so bummed with myself.
That's a big loss to take. And no, it's not necessarily the fault of the shop.
No.
Because they were the middleman.
Yeah.
That's all they were.
Oh,
are you mad at yourself, or who are you mad at?
I didn't do anything. I'm mad at the situation.
At gravity and magnetism. You should be upset with magnetism
just
as a whole.
Don't buy those magnetic clasps. I knew when I bought
it. How strong.
And my youngest son, Dylan, was like, oh, yeah, wow, that really is strong. I'm like, yeah, pull it. And it really is a strong magnet. I must have just caught it on something and it pulled open. So just my little tip, get a mammogram and do not buy any magnetic bracelets.
Now, how's your family going to celebrate with the ceremonial drinking of the salad dressing when something so horrible has happened? I would just take the day off.
Why do you have to make fun of me? I can do it on my own.
We're not making fun of you. We're trying
again,
to
again, there you go,
I'm
jumping
we're
in.
We're marveling at it.
I mean, Bertrand just piles on. I go through this at home. If somebody's fighting at home, like the boys are fighting, I'll jump in and they're like, Mom, don't pile on.
What did I do
That's
to pile on?
You just
what?
Said he wasn't fighting with you. Bill can defend himself.
I'm not. I just think, in my head, it's similar to, you know how in church when the priest does the water and the wine and they drink
get here eventually.
From the they drink from the giant chalice and they wipe their mouth with the holy
napkin.
Towel. Is there a holy towel? I don't know. But that's what I imagine goes on. Somebody rings a bell. There's incense. I just picture it being a very religious.
We don't make it a ceremonial thing.
Who
sometimes
speaks Latin? One's got to speak Latin.
Michael took Latin.
Oh.
Michael speaks Latin just for fun. Trust me, it's not fun.
Right. Time for us to drink the Paul Newman's.
Oh, no.
Amen.
I do my own.
It's homemade?
Oh, yeah.
It's even better.
Put some shallots in there sometimes.
That's right.
And the hairs, you got to pick them out from his mustache.
Shallot.
At least Michael can read my prescriptions now.
Oh.
Because he took Latin.
That's true. That came in handy then.
All right. That's all I have.
Later on in the show, not just yet, but later on in the show, Eric Zorn comes by every Monday. He has made a life-changing decision, Wendy.
I'm proud of him.
I didn't see this coming with Eric Zorn.
I 100% didn't see this coming.
Eric, should I say what it is now, or should we wait?
You can do it.
I can tease a little bit. All right. Eric Zorn has been a Chicago Cubs fan his entire life, but he says certain things have happened with the Cubs in the last couple of months or years that has that have made him say, enough with the Cubs, I'm a White Sox fan. Now, for people who live outside of Chicago, you go, what's the big deal? You were one team's fan, now you're the other team's fan. But if you live here, you know that's not an easy change to make.
You're the only one, honestly, that I truly know roots for both teams.
I do. I love both teams. Always have, always will.
Maybe Harry Tynowitz, but he's more Cubs, isn't he?
He has switched over a little bit, too.
See?
Yeah.
It's happening, but you're the only one, because people go, I like them both. I'm like, no, you have to pick one.
I love them both.
You're the only one that I believe.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I do.
What are you wearing today, though?
Pants.
Cubs hat.
A Cubs hat and pants.
Stupid little bear.
Wow. All right, a break, some news, more show. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He is sitting pretty in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's LGBT. I suppose we need to put the Q on there now, too. Let's just say it's Pride Month here in Chicago. In the studio with us, I'm going to do it in two little things here. Publisher of the Chicago Reader newspaper, Tracy Baim. Now, Tracy, you also are owner and co-founder of Windy City Times.
Yep.
That's been around how long?
Since 1985.
Oh, my God.
Third of a century.
Yep, I was 22
tremendous.
Years old.
Wow. Now people are doing the math.
56.
Wait a second. Oh, okay, you did
that. That's unbelievable.
Congrats.
All right, well, a lot's changed since the Windy City Times first was published, hasn't it?
Oh, my God. The speed with which our community has seen progress is thanks in part to the prior civil rights movements. We very much, as a community, built off the learnings of the civil rights movement and certainly the women's rights movement. And including when AIDS came, reared its horrible, ugly head in the early 1980s, a lot of the success of the women's health movement and the reproductive rights movement fueled the work against HIV and AIDS. So really, our success is 100% thanks to the prior movements and also to some really amazing, courageous people who laid their lives on the line for LGBTQ rights.
All right, why is June Pride Month?
The end of June in 1969, there was a raid on a gay bar in New York City called the Stonewall. It was a mafia-owned bar, like a lot of the bars in Chicago were mafia-owned, or at least mafia-controlled. And oftentimes, there'd be these scheduled raids that with the police, like there were like before elections and all sorts of other things. And in New York City, it was no different than in Chicago. So there was a series of raids that had happened, including earlier that week, and some people attribute it to some sadness around the death of Judy Garland, and other people say it was just a hot night in July and people were not going to take it anymore. A lot of transgender, or might have been called drag queens back then, of color, as well as some butch lesbians fought back, white gay men, all sorts of parts of the community were hanging out in and around Stonewall. They may not have been in the bar, they might have been hanging on in the park outside. And when the police came in, tried to get cards and arrest people, the community fought back, and actually the police had to barricade themselves in the bar before reinforcements came, and some police were actually fleeing, running away from the crowd. So it was really the biggest rebellion to date for the community. There had been other fits and starts of a movement for many decades, including in Chicago, but Stonewall was really seen as this line in the sand. It came out of the Vietnam War movement and civil rights movement. People just said, no, it's my turn. I'm going to fight back for my rights.
That was such a volatile time, Vietnam War, and then afterwards. Now, what is similar to that here in Chicago?
So what's interesting is Chicago in 1924, a courageous postal worker named Henry Gerber, who had fought in World War I, actually had been forced to go into the war or go to a psychiatric institution to be cured of his homosexuality. He was a Bavarian immigrant. He went to the war. He learned about homosexual rights in Germany when he was there. A man named Magnus Hirschfeld is one of the pioneers of homosexual movement. So when he came back to Chicago in 1924, he got a few people together and they started a Society for Human Rights. the first known gay rights group in the country. They were shut down very quickly. They did publish a couple newsletters. He was arrested, as were some of his colleagues, and the organization folded. But subsequent organizations started over the country, and a group called Mattachine Society out of Los Angeles eventually had chapters, and Chicago started two or three different times. It started Mattachine chapters here. We had a Daughters of Bilitis chapter, which was for lesbians, starting in the 60s. So there were, Chicago is very connected to the national movement. Pre-1969, there were maybe 200 or 300 activists around the country who would use their own names, be pictured in the media, be willing to really tell their stories. They were buffeted by thousands of others who might have been supportive, written a letter to the editor, things like that. And so Chicago in 1964, 65 was fighting against its own police raids. The Funhouse Lounge in the suburbs was raided. The names of people and their professions were printed in the mainstream media. People lost their jobs. A lot of
what
teachers.
What to say these people
are? These people were arrested at, for acts of, lewdness, perversion, whatever the words might have been. And so people lost their jobs, marriages, custody of children, and some people committed suicide. Jeez. This happened over a period of many years. So Mattachine Society's Chicago chapter did a newsletter in the 1960s so people could find out about those raids and the response. They were trying to meet with police. There was a raid on the Trip Bar in 1968, which was a downtown gay bar, soon before the Democratic National Convention. And the owners hired an attorney who actually just recently passed away, Rolla Klepek, and she fought it all the way to the state Supreme Court and won. So we were fighting back in many ways in Chicago through institutional homophobia. There weren't a lot of external protests and pickets and things like that in Chicago, but there had been ones that Chicagoans would go to in other cities. In Philadelphia, there was an annual reminders on the July 4th weekend. Gay people would picket in front of the Liberty Bell, and so we were connected to that movement. There were people who, some of them very recently passed away, who were part of that national push for gay rights, representing the millions of ones who couldn't come out at that point in history.
Tracy, we're at a time right now where the mayor of our city is openly gay. One of the front runners running for president, Pete Buttigieg, is openly gay. Did you think you'd see
and
this?
And adorable,
as Wendy will point out. Did you think we'd see this finally in 2019? Are we ahead of schedule or are we behind schedule?
If you would have asked me in 1984 when I graduated college and there were four openly gay journalists that I'm aware of in the entire country that weren't working at gay papers or other alternative papers, I would have said it would have taken longer. But I think what happened was not only did we benefit from prior civil rights movements, but the AIDS crisis really forced society to acknowledge our existence and also forced ourselves to out of the closet and to say our lives are worth more, our lives are worth fighting for. And the lessons of fighting back during the AIDS crisis really fueled our movement for everything from LGBT rights itself to marriage equality to fighting to be in institutions like the military and other places. I think we can never know the impact of the AIDS crisis, but I think we can tie our successes in terms of accelerating the movement to those lessons learned and those lives lost. So we wouldn't probably be this far along. It might have taken another couple decades had it not. I mean, tens of thousands of people came out as a result of the AIDS crisis. Many of them lost their lives, but others were just empowered by that moment. They said, people were losing custody of children when a partner would die, or losing their homes, losing their jobs. They realized that there were rights worth fighting for that had a day-to-day impact on their lives. So I think that if you later in the mid 90s, I would have said, yes, it would be possible, because we had our first openly gay elected official in Chicago in 1994, Tom Chiola, for judge. And now we have dozens of openly gay judges. We have state reps, aldermen, 10% of the city council had been gay before this election. I think it's now just under that. So we've seen that progress. Mm-hmm. Mayor of Chicago, though, I mean, that's a big deal.
I love it.
And of course, having an openly gay president, because we've had gay presidents, having an openly gay president would be unbelievable, right? As a lesson and a kind of bellwether. I think the Democratic Party in particular is much more sophisticated in ways that it supports people. There were gay people that were for Tony Preckwinkle and gay people for Lori Lightfoot and all sorts of things. I think people are realizing you can be single issue when it matters most, but really we're a multidimensional community, and we have Republican gays and we have Democratic gays and independents and socialists and everything else. And sometimes it matters and many times it does not.
I have a bunch of questions. It is Pride Month here in Chicago and everywhere else. And we are talking to Tracy Baim, owner and co-founder of Windy City Times, 34-year-old newspaper. And you are also publisher of the Chicago Reader newspaper now. We have more questions for you. It's all happening right here on WGN. We are celebrating Pride Month. It's June. Tracy Baim is with us. She is the owner and co-founder of Windy City Times, also the publisher of the Chicago Reader. And I want to know where the first, at that time it was called the Gay Pride Parade, where did it start? Where was the very first one?
And it is interesting. So to celebrate the, or to mark the Stonewall anniversary, four cities in 1970 had Pride, what we call Pride events. In Chicago, we actually had the first one because we were on a Saturday, and Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York were on a Sunday. Ours was at Bughouse Square, and then they marched downtown. Very much marches in the early years, you know, a couple hundred people, and it slowly grew. By the late 70s, there, Anita Bryant came through town, and there was a big protest in early June at my Medina Temple where she was going to be appearing. And out of that, the Pride Parade really kind of took off. Tens of thousands of more people came to that year's Pride Parade. People started to get much more energized by the late 1970s, and there was actually a March on Washington for gay rights in 1979. It was the first one.
When you hear about Boston wanting to do a straight pride parade, what is your reaction to stuff like that?
Well, you know, certainly anybody has a right to march.
Sure.
I think usually it's a very dishonest approach to what that is. They really aren't doing a deep analysis as to where the bias is. It would be just like having a white pride parade or, you know, a non-immigrant parade, I guess.
Yeah.
People just really are, it's an insult, really, to the people that have lost their lives because of discrimination, lost their jobs, their families, et cetera. It's a joke, really, right? Really, I don't know. I just think it's silly.
Yeah.
Let them do it. They have every right to march. Everybody does. Even the horrible KKK does. This is a free country. That's what we fight for. That's what gay LGBT people have been putting their lives on the line for, the right of those straight people to be jerks.
Yeah. All right.
That's the bottom line, jerks.
Very fair.
And to somebody listening right now that is gay, that doesn't feel they can tell their family yet or friends, any advice?
You know, part of that depends on the age they are. If you're still dependent on a family structure for your safety and your, you know, living, right? If you're under 21, and this generation is coming out so much younger, the average age in my generation, I'm in my 50s, that came out was really usually in college or right after college when you're not as dependent on family. People are coming out at 5 years old as transgender, 9, 10, 11 as LGBT. And so it really does matter who your family is. And familial homophobia and transphobia can be some of the most damaging that exists. It's something that a lot of other communities don't have to face. You know, that you have this someone who is not like you that's raising you. And that's, so I would say be safe first. There's time later. There's going to be a right time if you don't feel like you're in a family structure that's safe for you. But there also are tremendous resources out there. So in Chicago, we have the Center on Halsted, which was and Howard Brown Health, both of them healthcare institutions. Center on Halsted is also a community center, but they do have counseling services and referrals. So those are two organizations I would recommend. There's dozens and dozens of different organizations. So if you can get to some of the LGBT events this month, there are probably about 100 of them. There's different events. The Chicago Reader has a Pride Fest that's all ages. It's safe for all ages. 10 and under are free. And bring your family to that. If you do have a supportive family, it's going to be Sunday, June 23rd at Mars Brewing Company in Bridgeport. There's the Pride Parade the last Sunday of June every year, the Dyke March the day before, and dozens of other events that are happening. And Windy City Times and the Chicago Reader and other places have calendar of events. So start exploring what the community is and what it means, and slowly tiptoe out. If you're in a situation where you're married and there are kids involved, again, get advice. Don't make that leap until you know your bases are covered and you're safe. That's the most important thing.
That's great advice. You have a book here that Bill was looking through.
Very impressive.
How many books do you have out? And you are such a historian on all things Chicago.
You know, I feel like I definitely am a journalist type historian. The way I document things is very much like a journalist. And part of the reason I have felt compelled to put this material down, not just in newspaper form, but also I have a video website called ChicagoGayHistory.org that has 200 oral histories. I've been compelled ever since I started doing this work at age 21 to get the voices and the words down of people who were dying, and also historians who were dying. There were Greg Sprague, who's helped start the Gerberhardt Library in Chicago, which is an amazing LGBT archive. He didn't get a chance to live past the 80s, right? So so I'm amateur at it, but I'm just compelled. I have a compulsion to make sure these stories are told. Many of my friends have passed away as well, of all different reasons, but including HIV/AIDS. So when I was a first approached to do this book out in Proud in Chicago, it was because WTTW was doing a documentary on the movement a few years ago, and a company said, hey, would you do a book for that? And they said, well, Tracy's got a lot of stuff. And so was kind of happenstance, but we approached it like a journalistic project. So we signed out 150 articles. I did about a third of them, and then other reporters did pieces. So it's a snapshot of our history from the late 1800s to about mid 2007 or 8. And I love doing it. It was kind of like taking my brain and just doing a brain dump so that I can have it all in one place, because I can't keep it all so quote straight. And then I've done 11 other books that are usually either biographies of pioneers like Vernita Gray, who's passed away, a pioneering African-American lesbian activist, Chuck Renslow, a white gay businessman who started in the 1950s with a gay leather bar, the first in the country. So I've done biographies as well. Jim Flitt, the owner of the Baton, that was a really fun biography. I did those with Owen Keenan, who's also another historian in Chicago. Victor Salvo, who does the Legacy Project on Halsted. If you haven't seen it, it's the world's only outdoor gay museum. It's placards that are on the red pylons on Halsted Street. There's some phenomenal people documenting this work. We could use more. And luckily, a lot of the younger generation really cares about these stories in a way that we didn't even know they existed. Illinois just passed an inclusive curriculum bill. It means that LGBTs need to be taught in our public schools, and California has done this already in one other state. It's really important because I was never taught this stuff, and most people haven't been taught this stuff. You have to seek it out. And without it being proactively taught, people don't understand that we're not these obscure exceptions to the rule, that LGBT people are fully integrated in society and every cultural and political institution that exists. We need that to be same with African Americans in women's rights, et cetera. It needs to be part of that whole curriculum.
Tracy, if you had one wish in terms of acceptance in the gay community for the next year, 5 years, 10 years, what would that wish be?
You know, my first wish is that the internalized homophobia and transphobia that exists within us as individuals, but also even within our own community, there's infighting. Like a lot of gay and lesbian people don't accept bisexual people or transgender people. Like, we as a community need to be more accepting of one another. And then internally, the homophobia and transphobia we are taught from near birth. If we come with self-acceptance to the world, it makes our whole work more doable.
Yeah.
I certainly want society to change and laws to change and to have a National Equality Act that's passed the House but isn't coming from a vote in the Senate. We need legislation. But African Americans learned a long time ago that legislation isn't what's going to make change. You have to also have internal community work as well as societal acceptance. You can't force people to be better people by law. So I do hope that our community grows stronger internally, that we use this time under Trump to realize that we have more in common than we do different, and that then in 2 to 4 years, once maybe the administration changes, we can leap forward with some of the rights that are almost there.
So it is Pride Month, and you should be proud, and I'd like to commend all the people who have the strength and the courage to speak up and not remain silent. It is such a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Tracy Boyham, again, publisher of Chicago Reader newspaper, owner and co-founder of Windy City Times. And the books are available where?
Certainly Women and Children First Bookstore. Support your independent bookstores and Unabridged Books, but also online. I'm not going to say the company name, but we all know it. Well, you can buy them
there. What's the website that if people want more information on all this stuff, Tracy, where should we send them?
WindyCityTimes.com, ChicagoReader.com for the Pride Party that's coming up June 23rd. ChicagoGayHistory.org has my oral histories and includes information about this book.
Thanks, Tracy. Really appreciate it. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news. And then Eric Zorn joins us. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. We sing the praises of Zorn.
Eric Zorn's here, Wendy, from the Chicago Tribune. You know Eric Zorn. Hi, Eric.
I'd like to know him now because he's on the right team.
Ah. Go. Something you wrote recently has struck such a nerve in the city.
It was amazing to me the amount of mail and social media feedback that I got over this column I wrote on Friday. I posted Friday afternoon, and people were sending me email and Twitter messages and so on all weekend. Mm-hmm. And basically the theme was that back in February, I wrote a column in which I said, I've had it with the Cubs. I'm done. I know it's going to be hard. What I said was it's easy to say this in February before spring training, before, you know, it's anything's going. You can say, yeah, I'm not going to watch the Cubs this year. And the event that really pushed me over the edge was when they announced that they were going to be doing this proprietary TV channel where you had to pay an extra $5-6 a month, whatever it's going to be. Just to watch Cubs TV, and nearly all the games are going to be on that.
And a lot of people did it, didn't they?
That's for next season. This season, it's the last season where you're going to find them on the various on Channel 9. They're not going to be on Channel 9 anymore. They have to change that Steve Goodman song.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Catch none of it on WGN. and that was sort of the end for me of a bunch of little things that had gone on that the Ricketts family is fairly heavily involved, many of them in Republican politics.
Yeah.
Which is, I understand that rich sports team owners are going to be involved in politics. A lot of rich sports team owners are Republicans. I can separate that out.
Yeah.
But they were being fairly aggressive about it. They had been put like a bunch of money into a pro-Trump PAC going up to the election, and then they announced that
Todd Ricketts
was going to be the head fundraiser for Trump's re-election campaign. And then the nasty emails from Papa Joe Ricketts that came out, and I mean, not that he's day-to-day running the team, but this family, and I was feeling like, you know, enough, you know. I just sort of had it with them, and I was going to try rooting for the Sox.
Addison Russell, you might want to throw
Addison
in
Russell
there.
I mentioned, and Chapman.
Yeah, around this picture.
Yeah.
There were some of those issues, and also was it Murphy, the guy who they traded for last year, who had made some anti-gay comments?
Yeah.
Anyway, so it was this accumulation of all these things. I said, you know what? I'm going to try the White Sox. And
Glad to have you.
I knew it was going to be hard, and it has been hard because the White Sox are just mediocre this year, a third place.
But they're fun.
They're a fun team. They're limping along.
They're in the wild card hunt, to be fair.
They're 12 games back or so right now.
No, the wild card, I think 3.5 or 4.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
All right, well, then this gives
me some colors, too. The black and white is way cooler than that stupid royal blue.
And, of course, they're on WGN.
Yes.
Yep.
There is that. Have you thrown away any items of apparel that you had with the Cubs logo, a jersey, a hat, anything?
I haven't, but I have taken a Go-Go Sox placard and put it up in my cubicle.
Have you?
And I have a pocket schedule.
Have you attended any White Sox games this season?
I'm planning to. I'm hoping to go this week because my son's girlfriend is in town and she gets to see Chicago for the first time. We thought that would be a good introduction to that. But no, not yet. It's been so nasty. The weather's been so bad.
I'm going tomorrow night.
Are you really?
To a White Sox game. And are you going this week or next week?
Grateful Dead night, July 2nd.
Oh, there you go. Very nice.
So anyway, this transition has been difficult. And I've been, so in some ways I've been saying, well, I'm just going to try to wean myself off the Cubs. Because I mean, I've been rooting for them for more than 30 years.
Yeah.
That's got to be hard to let go.
And they're a good team. They're a fun team.
Yes, they are.
Javi Baez is a great guy to watch. And so there's all this, it's difficult to change your allegiances. And it made me think a lot about what it means to root for a team, to feel a connection to a team. And I grew up rooting for the Detroit Tigers, grew up in the Detroit area. And then I moved here, and I found that I couldn't really do that anymore. I tried for about 3 or 4 years, and they were even pretty good. This is the early 80s. And then I realized that it was much more rewarding to root for a local team, even though the Cubs stunk most of that time.
Yeah,
it's still more rewarding because you turn on the radio and it's there. You open the newspaper, good.
And you're
a lot
living
of
here. You got to immerse yourself.
And
into
you're living
it.
Here. Your neighbors, you can talk with your neighbors about it, and so on. So there's that sort of geographical component too. But once a team gets in your blood, it's very difficult to transition out. And then last week, they announced there's going to be a big Republican fundraiser gala hosted at Wrigley Field. And I just said, the Ricketts are just kind of rubbing our noses in it.
But what about the players? This has nothing to do with the players that you love and you love to watch.
Well, I wondered do you love the players or do you love who they play for? Because if they trade Tim Anderson, just to name my favorite.
I love Tim Anderson.
Shortstop extraordinaire.
It's great, got to watch. But if they traded him to the Royals, you wouldn't root for him anymore. You wouldn't care.
You'd root
against him.
You're rooting for the uniform.
It's the franchise.
The uniform.
It's the laundry you're rooting for.
Yeah.
And So there is that. But you know, the reaction to this comp, I said, was really strong. Really, you know, both sides of this came out in huge numbers. I mean, I've written about controversial issues. Just recently, I've been writing quite a bit about the abortion issue because it's really big in Illinois, and that's a real hot button.
Yeah.
And the mail, on this was like five times. Just amazing what passion people feel
right.
About their sports teams and about this mixture of politics and sports.
Can I jump in with a caller who wants to agree with you?
Just yes,
to give
always.
You some support. I know.
Always.
It doesn't happen often. Hey, Nance.
Hi. How are you doing? Now, I've got a few years on Eric. I'm in my 80s. I was born into a Cubs family, and I've been a Cubs fan. And I remember WIND and Burt Wilson and Jack Brickhouse, and you'd run home from school and turn on the game. And boy, they're screwing all that up. And as of next year, it's Go Sox.
Look at that.
As of next year.
So I loved your column. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for reading it and calling.
Well, I appreciate you every week, but this time it was particularly special.
All right.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thanks, Nancy.
She said WIND. I think she meant WGN, didn't she? Yeah, were they ever on WIND?
I don't know that they were on WIND.
I don't think so.
But
yeah.
Anyway.
Here's something that I find curious with Tom Ricketts showing all the support for Donald Trump. Do you remember about a year and a half ago, Donald Trump was taking some shots at Tom Ricketts' parents, saying, I know some things about the Ricketts family.
It'll come out.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, that was before he got the nomination. And the Ricketts family, to their credit, at that point, were in the Never Trump campaign. They were part of it. They were Never Trumpers at first. And then when Trump got the nomination, they were all in for him.
Not all in. There's a sister.
Well, there's Laura Ricketts.
Laura is not a fan.
And I guess people say Theo Epstein is on the left politically.
Right.
But he thinks, I don't really want this mixture. I would rather enjoy my sports
without
pure
politics.
I know that, like, I like to watch a lot of professional golf. I know a lot of these professional golfers are not aligned with me politically.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods plays golf with Donald Trump. I don't want to know. I really don't want to know Tiger Woods' politics. I don't want to know Phil Mickelson's.
How can you put
politics.
It behind you to watch golf but not baseball?
You mean because of the golfers? Or
yeah.
Because most of them are pretty quiet about their politics.
I guess,
And they may donate money. And people were saying, well, Jerry Reinsdorf, he donates money. Well, yeah, he donates, but Jerry Reinsdorf does not identify himself openly with political candidates and campaigns. Yeah, he donates money, but I think more like a businessman than as an ideologue.
Right.
And so I would really rather that my athletes and my owners try to keep sports and politics separate, because it's kind of a refuge from that. It's all this poisonous nastiness, and people of both political parties can go to Wrigley Field or was it Guaranteed Rate Field, and we can all together root for the Sox or the Cubs and put the politics aside.
But couldn't you also say the same about actors and actresses, or about singers, musicians? It's becoming more of a thing to let your colors be known as to your political
and most of the actors are, you know, on the left,
most.
So a lot of right people don't. I'm not going to give them any money.
Yeah, there are a few, and the question is, does that at some point an entertainer does force you into making it, realizing that if you're going to be buying their music or going to their movies, that you are contributing to that cause.
Yeah, sure.
So you get someone who is, you know, like Kid Rock or whatever, who you just want to support that guy.
Yeah.
Not that I necessarily would have anyway, but so it's a risk that these entertainers take. They want to use the platform they have
right,
to try
sure
to advance certain causes. That's fine, but it is a risk.
Right.
And this is what, and the risk sometimes has a bad payoff. Now, I'm not calling for a boycott of the Cubs. I'm just saying, I'm just sort of calm saying what I'm doing.
Yeah.
My personal thing. And I know that people are better at separating those things out.
Yeah.
And I heard from a lot of them over the weekend saying, look, I know the Ricketts family. Yeah, I don't agree with their politics, but I love Rizzo. I love Brian.
Yeah,
I love Baez. I love Hendricks. I love that team. And I do too. I mean, those are great players. They're fun to watch. So it's a difficult thing to do. But at some point, you feel like they're just pushing me a little bit too far.
I have a hypothetical question for you. in a minute when we come back.
Can I answer it during the commercial, or should I wait till
answer
after?
It now. I'll ask it. Give me the answer now, like in Jeopardy. Give me the answer.
Absolutely. What is absolutely?
Yes. All right.
Can I just read this text real quickly? A lot of people are agreeing with you, and someone, 815, says, we're not too happy about what the Cubs are doing either at times. We get it. However, we would either then be Brewers and or Cardinals fans, never the White Sox.
Oh.
Terrible.
Wow.
Oh,
interesting.
Shame.
All right. More of this. Do you want to jump in? 312-981-7200. Give us your thoughts. It's Bill and Wendy, along with Eric Zorn on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. He has switched allegiances. He's now a White Sox fan after 30-some-odd years as a Cubs fan. Here's a text. From 1945 to 1957, WIND held the exclusive local rights to broadcast Chicago Cubs baseball.
Ha ha! All of you wrong.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that.
Here's another fun text. You're all a bunch of communists. You don't see me calling for a boycott of WGN.
I'm not calling for a boycott of
you
of
said
anything.
That flat out.
No, I said it flat
you,
out.
This is just what you are doing.
Yeah, it's just what I'm doing. And I understand and respect people who can keep that kind of stuff separate.
Yep.
I get it, because I'm sure I do it in other parts of my life as well.
Sure.
You know, there are entertainers that I like, comedians.
Also a bunch of communists. There's only three of us. That's not a bunch.
Well, don't forget John Williams.
Comrade
John Williams.
He is a communist. He is.
Comrade John Williams.
All right, so here's a hypothetical. A friend of yours says, hey, Eric, I just got two tickets to the Cubs game. Come on along.
Oh, I'll,
go
I
with
would
me.
Go. I You'd would
still go?
Go? Yeah, yeah. Yes. I'm not really militant about this. The breakup is almost as much emotional as it is financial.
Yeah.
It's just like not caring as much about how they win. And slowly I hope that totally translates to, I mean, I'm actually watching Sox games now and I'm rooting for them. It used to be I rooted against them. I would just like,
did you really?
As a Cub fan, I know you're a Chicago fan.
I rooted against the Cubs, except when they were going for the World Series. I was cool. I changed my tune. I just wanted them to win one though.
I would root against the White Sox, even when they were down. I would like to kick them when they were down.
Wow.
Because that was what you, isn't that what you do in Chicago?
It's a rivalry.
No.
Yes.
If you're a fan of both teams, and I have been my whole life, if you're a fan of both teams, you have just doubled your chances of seeing your team go on to the playoffs in the World Series.
And doubled your chances for crushing disappointment at the end of the season.
Oh, no doubt about that. There's no question about that. I've been disappointed twice a year as opposed to everybody else being disappointed once a year. But still.
No, part of the fun is rooting. I think part of fun in sports is rooting against a team.
Yeah.
So you pick a team that you don't like, rooting against the Packers. That's fun, right?
But doesn't that make more sense? Because it's people from another city.
Yeah, but we got only room for one team in this town.
Yeah, I mean, I get.
Sorry.
I get it. My wife is on Team Bill on this. She roots for both teams.
Yeah.
And she thinks that's really cruel of me. But I now really root for the Sox. I watch them. I hope they win. And I still root for the. I was watching last night. I was watching the Cubs Cardinals game, and I was hoping that they won, and they won.
Were you good? Okay.
But I decided I'm just like, I'm not.
Yeah.
As excited as I was.
Have there been players that as they come up to bat? You see everybody cheering for, and you go, I don't like that guy for whatever reason. I'm not going to cheer for them. Even if they do something great, I'm still not going to cheer for them. Have you had that happen?
Over the many years?
Yeah.
I'm sure there have been. Yeah. Where you just,
I've done that several times.
But
the majority of the people just cheer if they do something
but it
great.
But it is the team, because you realize that when they trade a player, all of a sudden, like Dexter Fowler's on the Cardinals now. It's like when he comes up to bat, you don't go, oh, good old Dexter. Yeah. I hope he gets a hit.
I miss that Dexter
and
Fowler.
And remember how we used to have really hate Hayward? You know,
because
he was a slugger for the Cardinals. And now most Cub fans root for him. So,
well, there have been guys over the years like Dennis Rodman is a great example when he played for the Pistons.
Oh, he was horrible.
I hate that guy. He's the worst guy in the planet.
Pincushion.
Wait, he's a bear? He's a bull now? I love Dennis Rodman.
A.J. Przinski.
A.J. Przinski with the Twins.
And then came
Chris
to the
Chelios.
Right?
So that's what part of being a sports fan is, being able to switch like that. You have to be flexible. You have to love somebody and then hate them the next day.
Right.
It's harder with a team because teams are into people's blood. I mean, they have this woman, Nancy, you called earlier, 80 years.
Yeah. How about that? Good luck with this, Eric. Eric Zorn, everybody. Now a White Sox fan, still a columnist for you. You're not switching teams there, are you? Still with the Tribune?
I'm still with the Tribune.
All right, that's good news.